Tom Gazzola joins us for our daily chat. Tommy, lots going on in the world of sports right now. What is your what's your thoughts about now? First of all, have you ever had a hole in one?
No, I've the closest I've been is about 6 inches, and you know, God bless my dad, I love him. He's not a great golfer, and he has a hole in one and a bunch of eagles, and you watch him play, and you're like, how? So I haven't been blessed, Greg's, with that yet.
Did you happen to see the non-celebrated hole in one?
Yeah, the Sung Kang hole in one, where there was like no reaction at all except for it's a one. How weird was that?
It was rather strange. I thought maybe the announcer get a little bit more excited. Like, I don't know, am I wrong on that? Like, I get it's golf, but come on, dude. Like, there's no one else there. He's not going to hear you.
He just goes, it's a one. And he plays this hole quite often. And it just went back down to, like, took it to maybe a 6 out of 10 on the excitement level and brought it right back down to a casual 1, 1.5. I think you got to sell it, especially when there's nobody there. People are excited. It's the first tournament back. Like, yeah, give it a little pizzazz and sell. I mean, it was a hell of a shot, too. So I think this is a stark reality of our new world in sports right now until fans can be back at events. Like, it was just like, wow, geez, he didn't even react to his own hole-in-one. I think you hear like a, yeah, in the background, and that was it.
Now, Tommy, another one. With all the sports kind of quiet, you know, we've talked a lot about MMA. Well, there's live boxing going on now too. And did you happen to see? I'm not sure if I'm saying his name correctly or not, but Yennefer Vicente. Like, they might as well just call the guy the low blower. I don't know if I've ever seen a boxer do what he did. In a boxing fight, in a boxing match before. Like, I get that these guys are smaller, and he was bending over, but, like, did it not look like those were direct low blows? And he got three of them before he finally got disqualified.
Yeah, I'm happy to see live events, live sports back, live MMA, and the boxing world back. But this was, like, if you haven't seen it, it's unbelievable. ESPN Ringside has it on their Twitter account, but this guy, this Vicente, featherweight, just totally winds up with three low blows, and you saw the video, Gregor, like, they are so blatant, and he gets warned by the ref. His opponent, Jesse Magdaleno, in his own town in Vegas, gets low blow three times. The second one was pretty bad, and then the third one, it wasn't even like he was holding back. So he gets the DQ. I don't know. Like, if you're controlling a fight, what's the point of low blowing a guy? Especially if you know you're on the cusp of being DQ'd. Like, it's just ridiculous. And you see the first one, you go, okay, maybe a little bit sketchy. You see the second one, you go, all right, this guy knows what he's doing. And then he adds insult to injury and pounds the guy in the family jewels a third time. Like, funny in all the worst ways, and I feel bad for Magdaleno, because those were some big windups, Greg.
Like, dude, we got to get. I know we have some fans who listen that are huge boxing fans, but I would be love to hear their feedback from them. Because I text one of my buddies, he's like, "Man, I've never seen that before," and this guy used to be a ref in boxing.
Oh, and hey, some refs get caught in the crossfire too, and I don't care how small these guys are, but the way they can hit and the speed of their hands, it just knocks you out in a second. I know I would be down on the mat in a heartbeat if one of those guys punched me.
Tom Gazzola joins us on MTED Sports Theater, TSN 1260. Tommy, I was all excited. All week I was like, oh yeah, you know, well, really, ever since they announced, it's like, hey, the Oilers and the Hawks, there's going to probably be a lot of offense, right? Because usually in the start of the season, there's way more goals. At least that's what I've always thought, till I dug into it for the numbers this year, and I was very much disappointed to learn that there really isn't that much more offense at the end of the day in October than there is overall in the season. Like, slight amount, but not very much. And then I tie into the fact that Dave Tippett, and same with Colleton, they'll have had 2 months to prepare for their opposition, mm-hmm. right? The owners know they're playing Chicago in the qualifying round. They know it. And you and I both know when coaches have time to break down what the other team does, not to mention what they're doing. And the owners were playing quite good hockey before they left. As much as I want there to be a ton of offense, now I think there might not be.
So you're thinking more, we're going to see more of the prototypical 3-2, 2-1 games that is indicative of the defensive systems these guys put in place. And the other thing when you're bringing that up is I think the Oilers collectively played some of their better, more sound defense in that month of October. I mean, the LA game, the first Saturday of the year, that was, you know, there was no defense in that game. But outside of that, I thought Edmonton was pretty poised defensively. You had good support from the forwards in the defensive zone. And so if this is like a restart, which essentially it is, it's almost like a going into a new season, given the amount of time off there will be between the pause and the restart, you might be right on to something here, because if Dave Tippett can implement whatever wrinkles into his defensive strategy that he wants to get, if they can stymie any offense that the Hawks throw at them, I could see that being completely plausible. And the one thing I would say is, can the Oilers' offense overwhelm whatever Chicago has left on the back end and in their third and fourth lines defensively? That's where I think maybe the Oilers could break through offensively. But outside of containing Patrick Kane and to a lesser extent, you know, Jonathan Toews, who's still a world-class player, the Oilers may be able to shut things down if they show what they did in the early parts of the season have carried on into the restart.
Tom, I know you've spent a lot of time down in the minors over the years covering certain players at different times, obviously during the lockout and every half lockout, I should say. Did you happen to listen to Cooper Marody's song that he wrote, Agape, in memory of Colby Cave?
Yeah, I heard, I saw the video of him doing the little acoustic version there. The messaging behind it, obviously you tweeted about it and what it means. Fantastic. Like, I'll be the first one to tell people I'm not a massive country and Western fan, but when it's a tune from the heart and when it's profound and it carries the meaning that it does in regard to someone in the hockey world losing their life at such a young age, it kind of hits you in the feels. That's how I would describe it. And, you know, the other thing, too, is I'm kind of impressed because we know hockey players. They're pretty shy. They don't like to speak out too much. They're reserved. Good for Cooper Marody for, you know, kind of putting it out there with his other talents and something that he has a passion for outside of the game. Because, man, to write poetry, to write about feelings, to write about someone that you love or a fellow player on your team and share a story like that and you know, tug on the heartstrings, that takes some cojones, Gregs. It really does. And I like what he's done here. And the cause is great, too, with the money going to the Colby Cave fund as well.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Marody, you know, obviously he's been working on this last summer. He spent a lot of time doing it. This one, of course, I think somewhat more meaningful to him and his teammates. I saw a lot of his teammates tweeting about it earlier today. So good for them, and it goes to a great cause for the Colby Cave Memorial Fund. You can check it out. It's on my Twitter. I think, I don't know, I think Tommy might have retweeted as well, so you can check out his. Or you can just, it's up at Cooper Marody's as well. Hey, boys, Andrew Gullotta was famous for low blows in boxing from Troy. Good memory, Troy. That's true. You think about, like, that's what you get known for as a boxer. That is not the best reputation that you would have. Hey, what are you known for? So not ideal.
Punching you below the belt. Does that not give you a bad rap? And would the promoters not want to even bring you onto cards in the future if you're known for low blowing guys?
Well, you would hope not, but hey,
yeah,
that's what it thinks. Now, hey, did you see that article about the NBA that it might lock reporters inside the Disney bubble for 3.5 months? So my question is, if you have the option to do, and I'm not sure if the NHL will do that or not right now. The original talk was probably not, but we'll see. Would you go?
I would. I thought about this, and the article, it's pretty cut or dry, or there's no hit or miss here. It's, hey, if you're in the 220-acre compound at Disney World, the ESPN, Wide World of Sports, or whatever it's called, you're in there, and you're locked in for 3.5 months. Now, I like you said, I did 3 months down in Oklahoma City during the 2012-13 lockout, but I wasn't stuck in a compound, although, you know, the one at Orlando is pretty big. I was able to drive down to Texas. I went to Cowboys games. I went down to San Antonio. I went over to Austin. Like, I could do, we had free roam to do whatever. And listen, I'm a single guy that would be able to just lock up my place and go. Reporters and members of the media that have families and especially young kids, that would be tough. Like, Griggs, I don't know how easy it would be to you to make that decision to leave Trace and Beckett and just go down. Like, how could you do that? I don't know. That would be tough for 3.5 months.
Oh, well, I can tell you flat out, I wouldn't do it.
Right.
Right. But it's a choice. And so I wouldn't be offended to those who did take it. But if somebody said no, I could understand why. It's everybody's own choice, right? I'm not, you know, no offense to me, covering a Stanley Cup is not the same as winning a Stanley Cup.
Right.
I think it's significantly different, right? If I was, you know, if I was competing in something, totally different mindset. But I would know right. that going in, and that's something that I would have been prepared for. So, you know, I personally would not do it. And I think it's okay for somebody to say yes or no if they want to. Just like there might be a player who says that, you know what, I'm not comfortable, I don't want to play. And that's
Absolutely.
Okay. If you say it, I have no problem. I'm not going to judge anyone if they say they're not going to play.
Nope. I'm in the same boat as you. This is we're on a whole different level now with this whole pandemic, and it makes decisions tough. And I think, you know, this is a good time to understand why people make those choices instead of being like, oh, they're just, you know, they're being selfish or anything like that. You know how, you know, we have tendencies to jump to conclusions. No, this is a perfect time to try to understand other people's point of view. And I'm in the same boat as you. If someone says, I don't feel it's safe, it's not the best thing for me to go and play and take that risk, be away from my family, or to go and work and be away from my family for that prolonged period of time, I just say, yeah, I get it. That makes total sense, and I respect that.
The reports never say never, Tom Gazzola, in regards to Jesse Puljujärvi. I've been saying this for a long time. This isn't a shock to me, right? Like, if Puljujärvi maybe finally realizes, geez, you know what, the owners aren't just going to give me away for nothing. That maybe he comes back when next season begins. And I don't really believe it would be the worst thing because, number one, Tippett and Holland weren't here. So any of his frustration with the organization, those people aren't there anymore, right? Number two, it probably would require one conversation with him and the captain of the team. Hey, Jesse, da-da-da. Hey, guy. And because I think most players, guys have held out before and past, right? Players, you got to do what's right for yourself as a player. And if Jesse Puljujärvi comes back and is a better player, I don't think his teammates care very much at all.
No, and especially if he buys in more. Here's the interesting thing about this. I went to watch the Raptors final last year at a friend's bar, and their mutual friend is Jesse Puljujärvi. So him and I literally sat beside each other to watch this Raptors game, and we got to talking, and he flat out told me, Graves, he's like, I'm not coming back. I say, you got a new coach, you got a new GM. He goes, no, fresh start. That's all I want. And I was like, okay, fine. I respect that. I understand. And I actually went and saw those guys on Saturday, and they've stayed in touch with Jesse. And they keep telling me that they think he's changing his mind and he's warming up to coming back here if you know, the situation is good. He's had a year to take a step back himself. He played well in Finland. He probably matured a little bit. He's turning 22. And the other thing, too, is you go back there and you play in Europe and you realize what the NHL is and how special it is to play in the NHL. You're paid handsomely for it. The lifestyle is amazing. It's the best league in the world. And maybe that gave him some perspective And you know, maybe you could tell Marcus Slato, his agent, that, hey, I don't think going back to Edmonton is such a bad thing after all. But it was interesting to hear these buddies of mine and his who've stayed in touch with him say, yeah, it sounds like he's kind of debating it a little bit. And I was like, wow, okay, well, that totally surprises me. And I never would have expected it. I thought he was as good as gone at the draft.
Well, the draft, he could still be good as gone at the draft,
right?
Because the draft will still happen between now and the start of next season at some point, right?
Right.
So, who knows? But I'm not surprised by this. And because remember, like, Yuri Hudler did this in Detroit once, right? He held out, left, gone for a year, came back. Ken Holland, the best thing, the most mature thing you do is say, hey, you made your decision. I made my decision not to trade you. I think you have value. And you want to come back? Away we go. I think most players will let bygones be bygones, because it wasn't like Jesse Puljujarvi was the reason the Oilers sucked. I don't think there's a veteran that could look and say, geez, we would have made the playoffs if Jesse Puljujarvi at 20 years of age would have been a way better player. So I don't think there's a lot of grievances that need to be fixed here.
No, and that's totally fair. And you bring up Hudler. Another great example is Mark Giordano. He went to Russia, came back, and look at what he's been able to do in his body of work. So we'll see how it plays out. It's an interesting development. And I mean, considering the lack of depth or lack of high-end depth on the right side for the Oilers, potentially down the road, yes, he could fill that void if everything falls into place, I suppose.
Yeah, we'll have to see.
Yeah.
Tommy, have yourself a great weekend. Enjoy golf.
I will. You too, Greg. Take care.